Hey, Bears fans, this is Cole Wright from Marquee Sports Network. Now, we know you can never get enough Bears, so join us Tuesday for Bear Essentials, a recap of this week's Bears action and analysis of the week ahead. Then, we'll re-air this week's Bears game at 7 o'clock on Marquee Sports Network.
From the First Midwest Bank State Street Studio,
this is Chicago's new home of the White Sox.
WMVP Chicago. This is the home of Waddle and Sylvie for the ride home. Weekdays 2 to 6 on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
All right, the major news today, it broke about an hour ago, maybe a little longer, it was during Waddle's World, I believe, and it's Matt Nagy has given up play calling duties a day after saying they're going to keep it internal. One day, he started the press conference today by saying the first thing he wanted to say was he's giving the play calling duties to Bill Lazor. So let's talk about that with Michael Wilbon. Wilbon, as always, brought to you by Waddle's
Guys. That's right, HawkAuto.com. Ford, Chevy, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, Subaru, Cadillac, Mazda, and VW all in one place. HawkAuto.com, where Chicagoland saves big.
Michael, does this come as a surprise to you regarding Matt Nagy giving up the play-calling duties?
I guess a little bit, but all I know is that sort of bulletin that he's going to give up play-calling duties. I don't know, you know, I don't know what else is there. Does this denote some sort of power struggle that somebody asked him to give up the duties or commanded to give up the duties or else? There's so much more to come.
First of all, Mike, I just want to know, how will you celebrate the news?
I might buy some new golf clubs right now. I'm out in Arizona. I'm in such a good mood. This is like, you know, victory after World War II, all the, you know, VE Day. And this is like all that. This is like, you know, am I surprised? I'm surprised now, happily surprised. Let me give him credit. If there's been some introspection for the first real time, the result in this kind of change, him having to take the reins and say, hey, we can do better than this. And I need to devote my attentions to more sort of being a head coach in terms of play. Good for him. Good for him. Applause for him. That'll be one of the moves that I can applaud of his. If we find out that he was, you know, strong-armed into it, then that, you know, that opinion may change. But I'm interested to see what they look like now, because they've had two nationally televised embarrassments. Even though only the Bears can like have a game that goes to overtime and be embarrassed, but they were, and that was a game that they were just preposterous for at least half of it. And Troy Aikman, a Hall of Famer, expressed his disgust. I wonder how that played. You know, it's not about local media and what people thought, even if those people, some of them might be headed to the Hall of Fame or all pro players. But when you get mocked. Not just, they weren't really mocked. They were just, there was disgust. It's like each person doing the color in that game just took a backhand and went, oh my God, how amateurish is that? I wonder if that played at all. They're not going to tell the truth about it, but I just wonder if it played.
When you watch the games, Mike, and you're a diehard fan, what frustrates you more? What is the more prominent theme? Is it that Ryan Pace has made a bunch of mistakes because the talent on the offensive side of the ball is so bad? Or do you get more frustrated by the lack of creativity or the lack of dealing with that by making adjustments? Does the play calling bother you more or the lack of talent?
Yeah, the play calling does, because at least maximize what you have. Maximize what you have. And he's not doing that. I mean, he's making decisions that are completely counter to what a coach is supposed to do, put players in the best position. And when he doesn't do that, he doesn't even put the right players on the field that have the team necessarily, give the team the best opportunity to win. So it's more with the coach. You know, we've talked about what Pace has done. I mean, the quarterback situation is something he's never going to outrun unless one of these two quarterbacks was to lead the Bears deep into the playoffs. At least as deep as Watson, he's not going to catch Mahomes. But, you know, he's also made some good selections. I mean, there's some talent. The Bears cupboard is not bare. He's made some big mistakes. He's had some big hits. Nobody's going to criticize him for trading for Khalil Mack. Nobody's going to criticize him for drafting Eddie Jackson. He's done some things. I mean, you know, I'll tell you what, too. I think one of the things, and this is play call, this points at the question you're talking about. I think the receiving core would be dynamic if there was a quarterback who both had the time to get the ball to them in space and, just was able to utilize the talents that they have. So it's play calling. It's the coach more than it is the GM,
right,
for me.
Michael, remember, though, he put together that line that stinks. He hired the coach that you despise. He drafted,
He drafted
the quarterback who was the only failed quarterback of the three.
Well, yeah, but the quarterback one is that's worse. That's worse than the selection of the head coach. The head coach is still 25-15. I mean, that's why I was asking on Twitter last week. Can you justifiably fire a coach who's 25-15? Can you do that? I mean, come on. I mean, 25-15. I wonder where that record in terms of winning percentage puts Nagy. I wonder where it puts him. I don't know where it puts him if we ranked all the coaches and their winning percentages who have been around for 4 years, or whatever it is, 3+ years. So it's still the coach. It's the coach has a group out there now, and he had a group last year that should have been better. And I know the offense. Look, when you got offensive line woes, and Tommy can speak to this far better than I will ever be able to, when you have offensive line woes, you got problems. You got big, fat, sometimes unsolvable problems. I know that. Again, I covered a franchise who won three Super Bowls, and a lot of people credit the offensive line as being the most valuable members of those Super Bowl teams. The Washington football team, better known as the Redskins back then, with Hall of Famers on the offensive line. So I get it. But, and that is the GM's fault. That's Pace's fault. And it's his fault because he also could have kept a couple of those picks that he used to trade up. He could have kept those to draft linemen.
Lovie got fired with a record of 81-63, which was a 56% win.
Who did? Who got fired with that?
Lovie did. Now again, it's a larger sample size, but
They should have fired Lovie. They should have walked North Turner into Lovie's office and said, "Here's your next offensive coordinator. Let's play."
But Michael, Joel Quenneville got fired 2 years ago by the Hawks. Joe Maddon was run out of town even though it was in a firing
after they won.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Like you could let you could let these guys.
But there was
out of
a
town.
Downward. There was a downward spiral. You could feel that. I don't know that the Bears had a downward spiral. I know they missed the playoffs at 10-6, and then Lovie got fired. Did he get fired after 10-6, or did he get fired after 8-6?
Okay, he gets fired after 10-6.
They started 7-1.
But there was a feeling that a lot of people had in each one of the cases you mentioned. Look, I'm not going to argue that Joe Maddon's time wasn't up. I love Joe Maddon. I'm not going to argue that it wasn't time to move on. I thought it was probably time to move on. Who else did you mention? Lovie, Matt.
Quenneville.
That was different. That was different. That was different. Quenneville won those three titles. It's like you throw them a parade. They threw three parades, and then if you got to start over at some point. You're not going to go on forever with the same group, and that's going to happen with players too. We just got to say the words "last dance," and that should give us some perspective.
Right.
So No. Those are different. We're talking about Nagy's at the beginning of his career as a head coach. And yet, that 25-15 looks pretty hollow to me.
Yeah, you said hollow. Yeah, I mean, last year's 8-8 felt like 6-10 at the very best.
It did.
When you go over the quarterbacks that they faced and were able to get past.
Yeah, and look, I'm trying not to act like I keep saying that Tommy, and I know you don't want to hear it, this is nothing new. This is how the Bears roll. Mm. This is who we – what's the Dennis Green line? They are who we thought they are?
Mm-hmm.
This is who we are. We don't have a quarterback.
I don't want to be that.
I know, but we are that.
Well, no, I refuse to accept that.
Tommy, it's not like we're auditioning. We've already won the part. Luckman McMahon. All right, you want to throw Billy Wade a bone because he won a championship? Okay, fine. All right, so that's three in about 80 years. So we're not auditioning for the part. This is not up for debate.
Mike, let me make an analogy. I'm bad at analogies, so everyone's probably going to giggle at this. All right, I'm the first Waddle to ever graduate from college. Should I have just decided coming out of high school, you know what? No other Waddles graduated from college, so I'm just going to, I'm not going to go to college.
Yeah, but Tommy,
no!
but if you didn't do it, the rest of us looking in from the outside could say, ah, you don't know Waddles and never been to college. This is who they are.
That's right, but I broke that trend.
I'm glad you did.
Me too. Let's break this trend here in Chicago.
Of course, you're raising a family where they just crushed the trend. They weren't even looking back. The girls weren't. So,
no, that's right.
I know. I hear you. I want to break it too. Don't you think I'd like to see it? I'm not saying I want this to go
Don't you dare accept that the rest of your life is going to be filled with below average quarterback play. I will not allow you to do that. I will not allow that.
I'm going to need some pats on the back because Sylvie can give you the old attaboy if he wants. He knows he's grown accustomed to this, too, and he's younger than I am.
That's where it shocks me, your take on this, because I demand now, like, even more so that they reward me because we've been through this. You're accepting. You're just like, I'm fine. This is my lot in life with the Bears. This is who they are.
No. It's not that I don't get angry about it. I sit there every week and go, my God, again? The difference is here's the only difference, Sylvie, between the two of us. And maybe you need 20 more years. I'm probably about 20 years older than you. You rail against it and you think it's going to get better. I rail against it going, I know it's not going to get better. This is what we got. This is what's going to happen.
No.
I got to see somebody walk through that door with a different philosophy, a different demeanor, a different set of demands, a different sense of what football culture is, a different mandate from ownership, maybe more money. Maybe. I'm not certain about that part anymore.
Michael, that's where when we have this conversation about making changes 3 years into a coach's tenure, why they are relevant, because what we haven't seen with this general manager and this coach, both very nice human beings and both guys you want to cheer for, neither one of them have been able to accomplish what you've just enunciated. So are we going to continue to just wallow in it because it's only been 3 years from a coaching perspective, or are we going to pivot and change if it doesn't get any better over the next 7 games because you just can't continue to sit and accept it?
I would almost be willing to bet, just knowing what I know and having followed this team faithfully for 50-plus years, that there's no way this franchise, short of, what is their record now, 4-5?
5-4.
Short of 6-10, which means one more win, or short of 5-11, which means no more wins. Short of that, I don't see that change coming. Under any other conditions.
Sadly, especially
if they go 8-8 or something like that, they're not changing anything.
I agree.
There's no mandate to do it. There's no yelling, get out of town. We're not Boston, Philly, New York. We're not. And they're not going to do it. They're not going to feel the heat under their rumps. That's what forces management to change professional sports. And they don't have that underneath them.
Well, you know what forces the change? And it happened with the Bulls. And I think Sylvie agrees with me. It was no butts in seats. It was money.
Well, that is the fire. Money. Money's the fire.
Yeah.
Money's the fire. That's it. I mean, either you have a maniacal owner, and thankfully, we don't really have that. We don't have that in town. You have that. You just have a whimsical owner who just wants to do what he wants to do. Believe me, I've seen that in Washington. And you who knows what you're getting? Or you get fannies in seats start to, there's a reduction and then a disappearance, and that's – the money's always the heat, short of dictatorial owner. So we're seeing that. Yeah, we've seen that with the Bulls. And so now we're going to see what we see with the Bears. But the thing is, in football, as soon as you turn the lights on and open the doors, once we get out of this pandemic, people fill the stadium. So it's not going to be like Washington. And even that took 20 years to devolve. So I don't see that happening. I don't see that happening with the Bears. I really don't.
All right, coming up next, Michael, I want you to tell us your latest thoughts on what's going on with Tony La Russa and the White Sox. We also have to get into Russell Westbrook. I texted you, and I don't think I can give.
No.
Yeah, I know. I can't even give the.
No, I can't even. I know why, because his head coach is there. No.
Okay,
no,
right,
no, no, no,
on.
No, 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 no. The Bulls don't need Russell Westbrook at this point of his career. Stop it.
More Michael Wilbon coming up next.
Waddle and Sylvie. Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie. And at ESPN _ Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a Friday treat. Normally on Wednesday, we have Michael Wilbon with us right now. And so you gave us all we need to know before the break. You absolutely, positively, no matter what the compensation may be, you do not want Russell Westbrook coming to Chicago.
No, no, no. No, should Westbrook want that. I realize his head coach, successful head coach, successful pairing with Billy Donovan. I realize they would be together, but no, they're not. The Bulls aren't ready to win anything yet. Russell Westbrook, I think, is 32 years old.
Yeah.
So, okay, so Russell Westbrook is in that window. I'm not saying he's going to chase a ring. He doesn't have to do that. He's a first-team Hall of Famer, first ballot Hall of Famer, period. Okay? One of the great players of all time. But he doesn't need to come to the Bulls to do what? What's he going to do there? Is he going to transform them at 32? Have you seen Russell Westbrook's jump shot the last two seasons? Mm. No. No, he can make a difference. He can push over the top a team that's close. His competitiveness and his drive and all of that stuff that is contagious in a locker room and on a floor. All that is to be admired about Russell Westbrook. But he can't help a team that's trying to get to the eighth spot. No, 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 no. Anybody who calls in and says this should be told immediately, no, 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 no. Stop it. Stop fantasizing. Russell Westbrook's not going to make it. Are you talking about giving up Zach LaVine? Are you kidding me? I'm not saying Zach's never going to be as good as Russell Westbrook in all probability. But Zach is a piece. He's a good piece you can help build with and around. With. And they got to have more pieces. They got to do a good job in this draft. Maybe they have to get lucky in this draft. But if you do that and you've given away Zach LaVine, who is what, 26? Then what are we talking about? Giving away 6 years? No. People need to stop.
Everybody's been inundated with everything, so it's hard. There was no college basketball tournament. How much do you know about the top four or five prospects in the upcoming draft next week?
A few I know something about. I mean, I was fascinated with James Wiseman, still am to some level, to some degree. He's 7'1". He can help the Bulls because they're building. He can't help Golden State now. He feels like he's on the other side of this. James Wiseman is 7'1" and 19 years old, who's played six college games or whatever it is. He can't help Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green get back to a championship. He can't do that. He's not ready for that. You know, you look at the NBA, old people win stuff. LeBron, even Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis has been in the league, what, 8 years? I mean, young guys don't win in the NBA. So, and look how long it's taken Jimmy Butler to get to the finals. He had some young guys with him, but he's the guy. The closest thing we've seen to a young team do something like Denver. Denver's a young team. But they didn't win either. And it may be three or four more times. They may still not win. But so Wiseman can't help. Wiseman can help the Bulls if they want to draft a big and just stick him down there and grow with him. And this regime is really interested in player development and improvement. And so Wiseman could work. I still want Obi Toppin. It seems like he seems to be slipping in the draft. Wherever I read these mock drafts, I don't understand that. But I love Toppin. He's 23, maybe 23 years old, having played, I think, all 4 years at Dayton. He may have the maturity and be the only guy who's a true rookie who could have the maturity to help Golden State, but I don't know about that either. So, and they pick, obviously, ahead of the Bulls a couple of spots. I think they're two. So, you know, I've not seen the kid, the Israeli kid. I've not, you know, I've read about him. I've seen some clips. I don't know what that means. I haven't seen him play. I'm not a Ball fan. I'm just not.
Is that because of his dad, though?
I understand he's got a lot of talent, but I'm just not sold on him.
Why? Because of his dad?
No, I don't care about his dad. I mean, Lonzo Ball is going to be a pro a long time, and he's going to get better. And we're going to look at Lonzo in about 3 or 4, maybe 5 years even, when he's 8 years in, and say, wow, this was, you know, he may not be a number two overall, but he's a productive pick, whether it's as a starter, but the fourth or fifth best guy on your team. And if he's as a point guard, he could be really, really important on your team. I don't see it. I know a lot of people apparently see it. They keep working him out. But if you ask, and look, I've missed, just like everybody, you know, I miss. I don't spend my entire life on the draft like some people. But if you ask me who I was going to take to put in the lineup, whether it's the Bulls lineup or Golden State, the team that, you know, is ready made to go now. I mean, Toppin would be the guy that I look at and say, man, I mean, this kid, at least there's one side of the ball, the offensive side, where he appears to be able to do everything you want a pro to do from day one.
Yeah. Michael, as far as Sox fans are concerned, they have a team that is ready to win. They have the MVP. Abreu won that yesterday.
Yeah.
They have three silver sluggers. But yet there was some doubt with the hiring of Tony La Russa, and then this week with the story about him being charged with the second DUI in February. What was your big takeaway?
That La Russa acted like an idiot. I'm not talking about the DUI, which is bad enough. It's bad. I'm talking about the lack of responsibility. Hey, look at my ring. What is that? That was his version of, do you know who I am? That doesn't wash. And particularly now, we're looking for people who are public figures who are supposed to be leaders of men to accept some responsibility. Be accountable. Step to the mic, Tony La Russa, who is a very, 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 very bright man. And do what you're supposed to do. Be as mature as you are smart. And say, fellas, my bad. This is my bad. This cannot happen. This is my problem, only mine. I am the only one to blame for this. I'm not going to say, look at my ring. Do you know who I am? I mean, that's just so irresponsible. It's hideously irresponsible. It is change of plans irresponsible. And if Tony La Russa can't get that, and maybe Major League Baseball needs to make the White Sox make him get it. But you can't have that. You just can't have, do you know who I am? Are you kidding me? In this day and age? And you're supposed to be leading young guys into something? And you can't take accountability for your own actions at 76 years old? So I wasn't one of those people putting up red flags because Tony La Russa is 76 and can he connect with these guys? I mean, there have been older managers and older coaches who have connected. Ask Hubie Brown. Ask the guys who played for Hubie Brown. He was 80. They could still connect with him. So that's not nearly the issue that this much more serious thing has become. And I don't know what the White Sox plan to do about it, if anything.
Do you think it will hurt them in free agency? Or is that something guys just go where the money is?
Guys go where they want to go. It can hurt him in free agency if everybody involved thinks he's a jerk in the clubhouse and he was ineffective. That can hurt. Yes, that can hurt. A DUI? Or being irresponsible about the handling of it? No, that doesn't hurt. You're not paying that close of attention.
Right.
We're not talking about people deciding where to go and be on the faculty. We're talking about ball. And, you know, half of them are going to say, what does it have to do with this? So, no, I don't think that will hurt them. What would hurt them is if La Russa is failing in the clubhouse. That would hurt in free agency.
Michael, who's your predicted Masters winner on Sunday?
John Rahm. Rahm is my predicted winner.
Looking to see where John Rahm is right now.
What is he, 10th or 12th or something? He's in the top 20 right now. He's in position to do something.
He's tied for fifth right now. He is eight under par.
Fifth.
Yes.
He's eight under. Okay, so I missed a couple holes.
12, obviously.
I missed a couple of birdies. Yeah. Oh, he's 12. He's got to finish tomorrow.
Yes.
All right, so he's got a chance. What are the leaders at nine? He's only one stroke off the lead.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, I'm pretty happy with Rahm as my, you know, going into the tournament prediction. It's just a very attractive field with a lot of star power, a lot of people who have won majors, and people can identify with who they are. You have a good villain in DeChambeau, who I like to root against, but I don't want him to miss the cut. I mean, you know, him being in the tournament is kind of essential now. He is that guy that people either love or hate. And what's going to be interesting to see over the next couple of years where more of them fall. But he has absolutely got game and charisma. And golf needs him. Golf needs him and Tiger in there the whole weekend.
It's been really fun to look at Augusta in the month of November versus when we've seen it in April all these years, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the foliage thing is overrated because Georgia ain't New England. Let's
but
not
it
get
just,
carried away.
It looks different. Like, the, you know, around the green, there's brown. Like, I've never seen a patch of brown anywhere.
No, and you wouldn't see a patch of brown in person, Tommy. Right. I don't know if you've been, but there's no patch of anything. it's perfect.
Right.
And so, look, it's just good to have the Masters. I don't care. Will they have to do it again this time next year? Will they be ready for, and will the world be ready for Augusta in April? I don't know. Again, moving back to his regular spot. Because sports are having to make all kinds of decisions like that. We've just seen the NBA grapple with that decision. Do we come back late? Do we come back on time? What do we do? And the NHL hasn't come back, and they're usually a month in now. So we got a lot of stuff with the Masters, but I'm just glad to see it. As I say this to you, I'm standing on a golf course right now in the sunshine, and so for a fanatic like I am, that's all I wanted to do this week was, and PTI is, of course, knocked off the air by the telecast of the Masters on ESPN Thursday, Friday. All I want to do is watch the Masters this weekend. That's I say all I want to do. I'm going to watch, you know, by Monday, you know, I'll be able to stomach the Bears, I hope, after I've seen some, you know, and some well-played events over the weekend. I'll then settle in and see if the Bears are on deck for embarrassment number three on national television in 3 weeks, or if this change in play caller is going to make a big difference, or are they going to be fed up? Is the defense going to start to resent the offense? I mean, we know locally there's far more storylines than just I mean, they all feed off the offense is dreadful, but there's so many different layers of it. In terms of where the Bears are going,
Bill
or
Lazor
not going.
To the rescue, everybody! Yeah, yeah. Bill Lazor to the rescue.
You think it's? Are you guys not going to change? You got the Bears beating the Vikings on Monday night.
We do actually.
I do have them winning, but I would have picked them even if they didn't. I think it's. I like the matchup, and I would have picked it even if Matt Nagy was calling bad plays.
Okay,
Michael, enjoy it all. Okay, we will talk next Wednesday, before the draft.
Appreciate it. Sounds good.
There you go. There's Michael Wilbon. Mark Gene Greco's in the First Midwest Bank studio. What does he think of Matt Nagy giving up play calling duties? That's next.
Coming up next,
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
He's always got that weekend feeling, even during the week. He's Mark Gene Greco.
Yeah.
And he's brought to you by Chicago Cut Steakhouse, LaSalle and the River.
Yeah, living for the weekend. That high school mentality, you just live for Friday night.
I do that now, too, because, I mean, for so many years, like Friday night was nothing because I had an 8 o'clock flight to Los Angeles the next morning.
Yeah, that's right.
I was
right.
Up at 5
on
Saturday.
Yeah, you were doing that no sleep grind.
I'm a fat, drunken slob on the weekends now, and I love every second.
I'm a fat slob Monday through Friday, so.
Well, I try to keep it even. I keep the rig on the road Monday through Friday, but Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday, don't even come near my house because it smells. I'm a mess.
That's wonderful. That's a great picture.
Loud noises coming from the house.
Or if you do stop by the house, just get ready for a drink or two.
Yeah.
In good times, of course. Right.
So I'm driving home last night. And an unmarked gray SUV pulls up alongside me, and it's one of Chicago's finest. I'm assuming he's a detective. Detective Malik, I believe, rolls down the window. Love you. I'm Waddle and Sylvie. Love Waddle and Sylvie so much. I love the show. And we're having a conversation at each streetlight going down State Street, you know? So he rolls down the window again, and he goes, by the way, Nagy's got to give up the play calling. And I said, well, we'll see if he does it tomorrow. Let's see if he acknowledges it and announces it, and boom, there it is. But I'm puzzled about the dynamic here. How's this going to work? It's like, okay, Bill, here's the plays. You just do whatever you want. Come up with a game plan. You call whatever you want. I'm just going to stand here and be the CEO.
Is he going to oversee? Is he going to be able to?
No. He can't help himself. And you know, this had to be the hardest thing in the world for him because that's who he is, that's what he does, and that's who he wants to be. So
It may be what he wants to be, but as Sylvie's always pointed out, he had how many spins at this? Four times in Kansas City?
I think six.
Six times.
Like, that's it.
But didn't the Bears hire him because he was supposed to be the O guru?
Yes.
And to fix Mitch because he helped develop Patrick Mahomes.
Right. Well, I think Patrick Mahomes pretty much developed himself. Okay, let's just make that clear. But I'm interested to see what this dynamic is going to be. Can he keep his fingers out of the pie? Is he going to let Bill Lazor actually call all the plays, or is it going to be,
it's a pretty crummy pie.
Why don't we try Spider White Banana, too? How about 65?
We don't have that in this play. No,
56 GO reverse.
Did you see this from Mark Potash? It says, when Bill Lazor was promoted to offensive coordinator with the Bengals in week 3 of 2017, Andy Dalton at the time had a 47.2 passer rating. He had 0 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. Then Lazor takes over. In his first 2 games with Lazor calling the shots, Dalton had ratings of 124.1 and 146.0 with 6 touchdowns and 0 interceptions.
Because he was Lazor focused.
But then Potsy then followed it up with something more. He says, the rest of the story, the Bengals still finished 32nd and last in the NFL in total offense and 26th in scoring that season. Yeah.
So we're going to get a little spike, a little burst here, and they beat the Vikings on Monday night. And then Nagy said, we'll see what happens after that. So what this isn't going to be a permanent thing.
What you may see is something that you go, okay, now I see that. Now, there may be execution errors because there have been a thousand of those.
You think, maybe?
But maybe you will see, like, some play calling that actually the sequence of it all kind of makes sense to you. Maybe not.
Maybe.
But maybe. I just, like, listen, I know everyone right now wants to throw their hands in the air and just point the finger at the offensive line. And there's some validity to that, a lot of it. But let me remind everybody, the 2019 Bears offensively were 29th in yards per game and 29th in points per game. And they didn't really go through 1,000 injuries on that front.
I always wanted to ask you this question. In the huddle, as an NFL wide receiver.
That's not going to work.
No. Well, yeah. Would you ever say that?
Do you ever yell something out like that? They'll quarterback will look at you, this guy, and you know we're going to run it. But
wow,
yeah.
Well, my question is, have you ever heard a quarterback in the huddle say, "Just go deep, just draw stuff in the dirt, and just say, just go deep"?
But there were times where if guys were sitting on routes, you would make adjustments.
You come back and say
that
hey, I'm
weren't
open.
Necessarily part of the play.
They'd say, "Forget it.
It better work." I mean, it better work. Yeah. But
who was your first? Was it Greg Landry your first OC?
I think when I was first there in '89 and '90, I think it was Ed Hughes there, and then it was Greg Landry, and then when Wani came in, it was Ron Turner.
Wow.
So yeah, but for the majority of the time, I think it was. You're right, Sylvia. I think it was Greg Landry. But you know, again, when we were limited throwing the ball, we could always
run it.
We could always run it. Like we had that offensive line, and they were long in the tooth for the most part until you got along in the '90s. But we could always still run it. Like Neil Anderson was still running for 1,200 yards a season.
And his dog Axel.
Exactly.
Neil was so great. But I caught the end of Wilbon coming in, and he talked about, will the defense start resenting the offense now? Has it gotten to that point? You always tell the story, Richard Dent yelling at you guys when you come off the field. Yeah. Like, you're killing us.
Yeah.
Just get off.
No,
we'll
I mean, listen, and it was valid because, I mean, we were not holding up our end of the bargain. And that's the one thing that I think we've talked a lot about, and some people probably think we're overplaying it, but I don't. I think Matt Nagy has done a really nice job because of the length of time that the offense hasn't carried their fair share of the load, I would think that in a lesser copacetic environment, there'd be some bitching that goes on that doesn't seem to be going on up at Hallis Hall.
Yeah, talk about running the ball. We lost the great Paul Hornung today at age 84. Notre Dame, great Hall of Famer with the Packers. And talking about running, you run the play in the alley, the power sweep, and everything else with the Packers. I got to know Paul Hornung in retirement in his hometown of Louisville.
He was a character, wasn't he?
When I was living there and working there. Oh, my God. The Golden Boy was bigger than life on and off the field. So me being Mr. Smartass, I'm on the air one day. And we used to do a little sports stumper, a little sports quiz within the sportscast all the time. And so the answer to one of the questions was Paul Hornung. And we had this elderly anchorman, Ken Rowland. And he'd say, gosh, Paul Hornung, God, he was the greatest. And I go, hey, he wasn't that good. Just being a smartass.
Yeah.
Not knowing that he was from Louisville and lived in Louisville and watched our station. Bring right after the show.
Whoa.
Hey, Greco, it's Paul Hornung. I'm not that good? Really? And I'm like, oh, my God, Mr. Hornung. I'm sorry.
I was just joking.
So he used to eat at Mim's Steakhouse all the time right near my station. And I'd go there sometimes between shows, and he'd be sitting by himself with four waiters around him and in those green, you know, jackets. And he'd order like two steaks, three baked potatoes, you know, whiskey sour, scotch on the rocks, bottle of wine, telling a million stories. I mean, he was so great. He was unbelievable. He goes, yeah, the reason I'm still alive, and this is when he was in his 40s. The reason I'm still alive is I met this little Italian girl, and she takes care of me. So he made it to 84, probably because of her. Because guys like him, Mickey Mantle, Bobby Hull, great athletes of that era, can you imagine what they would have done had they taken care of themselves, been in shape, got some sleep, and didn't drink? Oh, my God. It would have been incredible. Mickey Mantle would have 800 home runs. Bobby Hull would have 1,000 goals.
Years ago, when ESPN first started, ESPN 1000, we had the Mike Ditka roast. I don't know if you remember that. Were you there, Mark? Did you go to that?
I think I was
Fell
there.
Off the stage,
went off the back of the stage. Yes.
And it was classic. It was over. Like, Paul Hornung and Ditka were, like, getting into it jokingly and drinkily. Someone fell. Who fell off? Was it Ditka or Hornung who fell off?
No, it was Ditka. Went right off the back through the curtain. That, remember the Canadian Football League Hall of Fame dinner? Joe Kapp got into it with another CFL Hall of Famer, some old guy.
Yes.
And they start arguing for real. They start punching and throwing and tackling each other on the stage and went off the stage.
Fighting. You could Google that. Yeah.
Joe Kapp was
available.
A tough SOB, wasn't he?
Then went on to play in the Super Bowl against the Chiefs for the Vikings and got his head smashed in. But, man, he was a tough guy. He really was.
So let's talk some more Bears. As if you want to weigh in with Marky, 312-332-3776. We'll also give you, if you're just getting into your car, a Masters update. They did not finish the second round today. So we'll give you the latest there. They did not, no. It's all coming up with Mark Jean Greco as we head into the weekend next.
Waddle and Sylvie, weekdays, 2 to 6.
Follow on Twitter at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87. ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
We have a giveaway, don't we, Mark?
I was just going to say, we have a...
What are you giving me?
We're giving you nothing. A $200 gift card, courtesy of our great friends at Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey, A Night with Screwball.
And it's bound to get a little nutty.
To West End, right? Abdallah, is that where we're going?
Yes, West End, right on Madison.
Yeah, let's go back to West End.
Not a $50 gift card. Not a $100 gift card. Not a $150 gift card. $200.
Damn right.
$200 gift card. What caller do we need?
Caller 20.
Caller 20.
20 for $200 at West End. Mark once almost got into a fight in the valet line at West End.
That's right. Yeah. Guy took a swing at me. I had to defend myself. He
Did
was
you
drunk.
Hit him?
He was hammered.
Did you hit him?
Yeah.
How'd it go?
Oh, if I would have had more time, he would have been a puddle of goo. But,
really?
You know. I'm there with I didn't think you actually got into the fight.
I thought there was chirping.
I was restrained, and so it was a glancing blow.
How many fights have you been in?
What, like real fights?
Yeah.
Not many. I was playing golf with Bob Vorwalder, and we're telling all these stories. And he goes, Mark, this is the second fight story you've told. So should I just warn my friends about today that you might get in a fight now?
Yeah.
No, I mean, how many of us have actually been in a bunch of fights?
I have not. I told you what I used to do.
I would say like three or four in my entire life where things were broken.
I'm too smart to know that I can't fight, I don't get into fights.
A guy hit me in the face, broke my nose and two of my teeth with one punch.
When?
That was the extent of the
fight.
Where
was that at?
I'm a freshman in high school. I got my new winter coat. I get on the bus. It's all snowy and muddy.
I remember this.
Yeah. And Joe Manning, big defensive end on the football team, a senior, he trips me. I fall down, get my new coat all dirty. I get up, you mother called him every name in the book, went to the back of the bus, turned around, he sucker punched me in the face, broke my nose, top front tooth, bottom front tooth, exposed nerve, blood everywhere. And the
did you cry or did you take
I'm kind of crying and I'm stunned. And we had an older woman was the bus driver, and she looks in the rearview mirror and goes, whoops.
Settle down back there.
So it's like an hour and a half bus ride back out to the suburbs, and I'm just, sitting there holding my face together.
What did Big Joe or whatever his name is, what did he do? Did he apologize?
I went home, and my mom is standing in the kitchen, and I go, Mom, and I show her, and she goes, oh, my God.
She wants to know whether or not the jacket got blood on it.
Don't get on the rug. That's what she said. Stay off the rug. So then my dad comes home. I go, Dad, look. And he goes, what the hell? And I go, Joe Manning punched me in the face. And my dad calls his dad. Hey, we've got a little issue here. Your son punched my son, did some damage. The guy goes, F you. Hangs up the phone on my dad.
Oh, wow. No.
So my dad sues him. They had to pay for all the dental work and get my nose fixed, which they didn't really fix too well, as you can see, and everything else. And so, of course, Freddie Postolese says, that's not enough. We got to get revenge.
Oh, is this the bowling ball story?
Yeah. So he gets one of his dad's bowling ball, and we get a tank, you know, like a can of gasoline, and we're dressed like Belushi, all in black. And we go to his house, pour gas all over his bushes and his front lawn.
Kill all his bushes.
And, well, set the bushes and the lawn on fire.
Oh, you set it on fire?
And Fred threw the bowling ball through the picture window of their house. And he comes busting out the front door, and we're running. I'm doing like a 4-2-40.
Can they see your faces?
No, we got stuff on our face. We got little caps. We're all in black. And so he never caught us, but he knew we did it. And we know he knew we did it. And yeah, he went off to college, and that was it. So nothing happened. But after
what ever happened to Big Joe Manning?
I don't know. I'd like to Google him. See, every time you Google somebody I talk about, they're dead. So don't even do it.
Joe Manning, what was his hometown?
Williamsville, New York.
Joe Manning, Williamsville. Hold on.
Williamsville. It's one word. Billtown. And he went to Canisius High School. I don't know where he went to college. I think he played football in college.
Somewhere. Really? I don't see anything.
Okay, he's dead.
I think you're safe.
He's dead.
Where did he go to school?
Canisius High School. Canisius.
Does anything good ever happen on a high school bus?
Like, no. You know, well, yeah, we exchanged homework. I'll trade you the Latin for the math. We're on the bus for more than an hour. We did all our homework on the
bus.
That's
before you get punched in the face by Big Joe Manning.
Right. Like in grammar school, the bus was fun. Junior high, it's But like in high school, you don't want to be on a school bus in high school, do you?
No.
No, but you had
nothing
to.
Nothing good happens
I
on
had
that
to
thing.
Freshman year, but then sophomore through senior year, we had, you know, guys had cars and you alternated carpools. Yeah, but I did have to ride the bus that one year.
What kind of car did you have back then, being a car guy?
62 Falcon.
Yeah.
No radio, 6-cylinder, hole in the floor, stuffed beer cans down there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my first car. But I mean, I either had jug or practice after school every day.
What's jug?
Detention.
Oh.
Justice under God with the Jesuits. So it was always dark out when I got home. I get home like 7 o'clock at night because I had to take the city bus home if I didn't have a car. And then I hitchhike from Main Street down to my house. It was like an ordeal.
Your hitchhiking stories.
Those are my favorite Greco stories.
Yeah.
The best. Oh, the greatest hits. We should do a podcast with the greatest hits.
We have to do it on a podcast for sure.
So where people can just get it when they want it, on demand.
So
at the Masters, really quick, because I promised everyone this. So how do you say it, Marky? Is it Abraham Answer? Is that how you've been pronouncing
Answer.
It?
Answer. He's the answer. Yes.
Abraham Answer is among four golfers at 9-under. Him, Cameron Smith, Justin Thomas, and Dustin Johnson are all 9-under. And they all finished their round today.
Is Tiger still even? He did not finish.
Tiger's 4-under for the tournament, even on the day through 10.
I'll tell you.
He's 5 shots off the lead.
They have had so many majestic shots during ESPN's coverage. The silhouette of Tiger teeing off with the sun going down behind him. Just spectacular. The coverage has been great. You guys were talking about how everything's green. There isn't one patch of brown.
Well, there is some, which is shocking to me. Because when I was there that April, like, I understand it's 6-7 months difference. But, like, you never see. They don't allow anything not to be totally green.
Compared to every other course.
Oh, no
on
question.
The tour.
Yeah, no question.
I mean, the fairways are like greens.
Yeah.
It's manicured. It's perfect. It's absolutely pristine. My parents, their favorite thing was to go to the Masters and walk the course with the players during the practice round.
Really?
Like, you could just buy a ticket for that.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't get in for
so
the actual
So they used to
rounds.
Go do that.
And they'd have the little chairs with the spike you sit in. Oh, my mom was a spectacular golfer, great athlete. And that was their favorite thing.
Wow.
And if you bought a hot dog or anything else to eat, they wrapped it in green paper. So if you dropped
Still
it
do.
On the ground, you'd never see it on
Still
TV.
Yeah.
And the restrictions were incredible back then, even more so now, no cell phones.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's a special place.
It's fun.
Yeah.
All right, Marky, enjoy the weekend. Thank you to Chicago Cut for sponsoring and partnering with us, as always.
Always.
Chicago Cut Steakhouse, David Flom, Maddie Moore, LaSalle and the River. It is absolutely awesome from that first drink you get to the dessert and then, of course, the steaks and the seafood.
Oh, by the way, I got my trunk fixed in my car today.
Oh, excellent. Well done.
Yeah. Turns out there's a switch in the glove box that you can flick on so valets won't get in your trunk. I forgot all about that.
You don't want a valet in your trunk.
That was the problem. I'm such an idiot. Seriously.
Bleck and Abdallah, a lot on the Matt Nagy giving up play calling duties coming up in 2 minutes, correct?
I think so.
Is Matt Nagy pulling the wool over our eyes?
Ooh. Oh,
I just like to sound mysterious.
And then we have the odds couple tonight, too, don't we? Right after you guys? So it's all coming
up. What
are
the odds he continues to relinquish the play calling duties?
See how it goes.
Yeah.
Thank you to Brian Greasy.
Is he just
going to
have like a book or a magazine on the sidelines that he's looking at?
I do not know.
Michael Wilbon and the one and only Marquis Greco. For Black and Abdalla and Marquis and Waddle, I'm Sylvie. It's ESPN 1000. Have yourself a great weekend.
I am really excited.
That was a big thrill.
Hi, it's Andre Dawson, including myself, Ed Belfour.
Who's getting wild tonight? That's what I'm talking about, baby.
No high from you.
What?
No high from you.
I'm giving more buys than highs.
Waddle, waddle, waddle. Then he waddled away. Waddle, waddle. Till the very next day. Bum, 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 bum.
And to all a good night.